Imagine waking up one morning, right? And you walk out of your apartment.
Okay.
And you realize your landlord has suddenly just completely changed the locks on your front door.
That's not good.
No, it's terrible. But instead of handing you the new key, they've just taped a little sticky note to the frame. And it basically reads, "Hey there, you have exactly 30 days to manually submit a written request for your new key.
Wow.
And if you don't do that, we're just going to remove the door entirely and leave your apartment wide open for anyone who feels like visiting."
I mean, it sounds completely absurd when you frame it around physical property like that. You would never tolerate that level of intrusion.
Right, not at all.
Nor would you accept your landlord just shifting the entire responsibility of your basic safety onto your shoulders. Yet in the digital world, this kind of open door policy is exactly what large corporations keep doing to us.
Yeah, they really do.
They continually manufacture these new vulnerabilities, and then they just shift the burden of fixing them entirely onto the user.
And that is exactly why we are going on a deep dive today into the hidden, really massive costs of software default settings.
Yeah, it's a huge topic.
We're being guided today by some fascinating recent analysis. It's a May 2026 report and newsletter from cybersecurity expert Fred Cohen over at all.net.
It's a great read.
It really is. And our mission for you, the listener, is to explore how these seemingly tiny technical changes, made by big tech companies, are actually massive multi-billion dollar governance failures.
Absolutely.
We're going to look at what that means for you as a daily user of technology and potentially as a decision maker in your own professional life. So, okay, let's unpack this.
To understand the sheer scale of this problem, we really need to look at the real-world catalyst for this discussion. We're talking about a recent update rolled out by Google Meet.
Right.
It's been pretty bluntly referred to in security circles as Google doing a quote, stupid security thing to a few hundred million people.
It's a great blunt phrase. And I mean, the specific change they made feels identical to that landlord analogy.
It really does.
Google essentially created a new default setting where anyone who attends a recorded Google Meet is automatically allowed to download the recordings.
And the transcripts of that meeting,
Yeah,
too.
exactly.
And they can do it without getting explicit permission from the person who actually owns or hosted the meeting.
Just to put a finer point on the deployment strategy there, they didn't ask if people wanted this.
Right.
They simply emailed domain owners to let them know the change was happening, and they gave those administrators a 30-day window to manually log in and stop it.
That 30-day sticky note.
Exactly. If they didn't opt out within those 30 days, this new open access policy just became the permanent default across their entire system.
So if you're a systems administrator for, say, a hospital or a law firm or a major corporation, you suddenly have this ticking clock dropped right in your lap.
And you didn't ask for it.
Right. The analysis calculates the math on this, and it is honestly staggering. Dealing with this one single toggle switch creates an estimated 83,000 systems administrator hours globally.
That's a lot of hours. Assuming an hourly rate of, what, $40?
Yeah.
That is roughly $3 billion of completely unnecessary work.
Yep, 3 billion.
And that doesn't even factor in the hours that executives and legal teams have to spend sitting in conference rooms just trying to figure out what their corporate policy should even be regarding this new default.
It's a massive drain on global productivity, but the real fallout is that a huge percentage of these domain owners will do absolutely nothing.
Really, nothing.
Well, changing the setting requires effort, institutional awareness and time that many IT departments simply do not have to spare right now.
I mean, that makes sense. Everyone is stretched thin.
Right. So they will let the 30 days pass, the default will take effect, and they'll only discover much later, perhaps during a data breach or an audit, that they have completely lost control over sensitive corporate information.
Oh, wow.
That delayed realization is what leads to the lawsuits, the massive internal discontent, and frankly, people losing their jobs.
I have to play devil's advocate here for a second, though.
Sure, go ahead.
We're talking about a $3 billion cost for a toggle switch. Isn't this just like a minor administrative annoyance rather than a true corporate catastrophe? You log into the admin portal, you click off, you go to lunch.
What's fascinating here is that the $3 billion is purely the administrative friction. That's just the wasted time.
Okay.
The true catastrophe isn't the annoyance of clicking a button. It's the fundamental failure to understand what security actually means. People, even within the tech industry, constantly confuse privacy or secrecy with actual security.
That's an interesting distinction.
In professional security architecture, there's a foundational concept known as the CIA triad, and that stands for confidentiality, integrity, and availability.
Ah, the classic CIA triad. And the issue is that big tech seems to have completely inverted the hierarchy of those three pillars, right?
Precisely. They prioritize availability, basically making everything incredibly easy to access, share, and download over the other two.
Right, because availability drives engagement.
Exactly, but confidentiality is about keeping secrets secure. And integrity ensures that data hasn't been tampered with or exposed to unauthorized parties who might alter its context.
So, by prioritizing availability.
By defaulting to a state where anyone can download a corporate recording, Google heavily favored availability. Mm-hmm. In doing so, they basically shattered confidentiality and compromised integrity because now unverified third parties hold copies of your data.
Wow.
That is a fundamental violation of core security principles.
So that $3 billion waste isn't just an administrative headache then. It's really the symptom of a much deeper engineering failure.
Yeah, exactly.
Because to push this update out,
yeah,
they completely ignore basic security philosophies that have been around for, what, decades?
Absolutely. Decades.
Let's look at the underlying logic they bypassed, maybe starting with the bedrock principle of default deny.
Yeah, default deny is the old school engineering concept that granting permission is always a high stakes action. Therefore, the baseline out-of-the-box setting for any system should always be to deny access. The user should be required to make a conscious, deliberate choice to open a door. Instead, Google defaulted to allow.
And by doing that, they also broke the principle of being backward compatible.
Right.
Because when a company rolls out a new feature, it shouldn't fundamentally compromise the way things operated previously. Like, if my internal company meetings were tightly secured yesterday, a new software update shouldn't suddenly make them vulnerable today without my explicit instruction.
It fundamentally changes the terms of service after the fact. And this also ties into another core engineering philosophy, which is fail-safe.
Fail-safe.
Right.
The concept of fail-safe dictates that the failure mode, which is what happens when a user does absolutely nothing or misses a warning, should always be the state that does the least amount of harm.
That makes total sense.
Right. If a system administrator misses that 30-day email window, the system should default to the safest possible state, not a high-risk one.
So what does this all mean? If we look at the fail-safe principle and apply it to a physical object, what Google did is essentially like building a car where, if the brakes fail, the default safety mechanism is to press the accelerator to the floor.
That is a perfect analogy.
It's totally backwards.
It is entirely backwards. And when you abandon those engineering philosophies, you slam right into real-world business consequences, specifically regarding liability and legality.
Right, because of the data exposure.
By forcing users to make wasteful, time-consuming decisions just to protect themselves, the company is actively injecting legal liability into their clients' operations.
Especially regarding the legality. I mean, providing third parties with recordings or making those recordings accessible without explicit ongoing permission,
mm-hmm.
that is literally illegal in many jurisdictions.
Yes. Wiretapping laws, for instance.
Exactly. Think about two-party consent laws for recording conversations. Inherently trusting all attendees to keep a downloaded video confidential just because they were given a copy is a massive legal minefield.
It absolutely is, and it forces us to confront a very uncomfortable reality about the ecosystem we operate in.
Which brings me to a major question. We are talking about Google here.
Right.
These are some of the most brilliant, highly compensated engineers and product managers on the planet. Why would brilliant engineers design something so entirely backwards? Why build the car that accelerates when the brakes fail?
Because it's not a mistake.
Really?
We have to stop viewing these updates as oversights by careless developers.
Hmm.
This is a proven, highly effective strategy.
Oh, wow.
While Google might have done this recently to push their new AI capabilities onto everyone because, you know, AI needs massive amounts of available data to function, they are just reading from a playbook that was perfected long ago by companies like Facebook.
The Facebook playbook of the early 2010s. It's a fascinating piece of tech history, honestly.
It really is.
They would continually introduce what they branded as new privacy options. But these new tools almost always defaulted to allowing the sharing of your data. And simultaneously, they would deprecate or just phase out the older, stricter options that users had carefully set up to deny sharing.
It is a deliberate strategy of attrition. They essentially weaponize friction to wear the user down.
Right.
When you want to protect your privacy, they make it incredibly difficult. You have to click through six submenus, read confusing language, and manually toggle switches.
It's exhausting.
But when they want to share your data, they make it seamless and automatic. Eventually, the user just stops fighting it. They experience alert fatigue, they stop digging through the settings, and the company gets exactly what it wants: widespread data availability.
It's essentially a war of endurance. And one of the most pernicious ways this spreads today is through third-party consent agreements.
Oh, yeah.
And those massive walls of legal text you have to agree to just to use a basic service. The providers change these agreements constantly, sometimes giving you an email notice, but never actually giving you a choice other than accepting it or abandoning the service entirely.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we realize this isn't an anomaly with one or two bad actors. The entire digital ecosystem is built on this exact model.
The whole thing.
The technology is designed to serve the data acquisition needs of the host company first, and the security needs of the user a very distant second.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If changing providers doesn't benefit you, because essentially all the major players use these exact same attrition tactics.
Right.
And these massive consent agreements are effectively forced on us if we want to participate in modern professional society. Has the word consent just become completely meaningless in the digital age?
That is the core philosophical problem we are facing. If consent is extracted under the threat of digital exile, meaning you either agree to our new data policies or you can't join the meeting with your boss, is it really consent?
I would argue no.
The analysis we're looking at argues that broken consent and predatory default settings are actually just symptoms. They are the visible rash.
Okay.
The underlying disease is deeply flawed corporate governance and decision-making.
The idea that companies are paying less and less attention to how they actually make decisions. They're making bad choices because they aren't using rigorous methodologies for high-stakes governance.
Exactly. And to combat this disease, Fred Cohen mentions a meta framework he released called JDM, which stands for Judgment and Decision Making.
JDM, got it.
Now, it is crucial to understand what a meta framework actually does. It is not a software tool that tells you what the right answer is. JDM only helps you decide how you should go about making decisions about other things.
So it's about establishing the architecture of your choices before you even have a problem to solve.
Yes. Think of it like air traffic control.
Okay, I like this.
You do not wait until two passenger jets are hurtling toward each other at 500 miles an hour to have a committee meeting about who should turn left.
No, that would be a disaster.
That is the wrong decision-making process for a high-consequence event. Instead, years in advance, you build a rigid, structured framework of flight corridors, altitudes, and rules of engagement. JDM is about building that structured airspace for corporate decisions.
That makes perfect sense. For high-consequence, repeatable decisions like how a multi-billion-dollar company handles the privacy of hundreds of millions of users' structure is absolutely required.
Exactly.
Let's run a hypothetical here to really ground this. If Google had applied a JDM framework before deciding to change the Google Meet default, how would this $3 billion mess have been avoided?
Well, if they were using a rigorous decision-making framework, the process wouldn't have started with a product manager saying, "Our AI needs more data, let's open the transcript floodgates."
Right.
Instead, the framework would dictate that any change affecting user confidentiality must pass through specific evaluation gates.
Gates that require them to calculate the externalized cost to the user.
Exactly. One of the steps in a proper framework would force them to quantify the administrative burden they're about to push onto their clients. The framework would flag that overriding the default deny and fail-safe principles introduces unacceptable legal liability.
So it catches the problem early.
By the time the proposal reached the engineering team, it would have been restructured to be an opt-in feature rather than an opt-out demand, saving that $3 billion in wasted time.
Wow.
The failure we are seeing isn't technical. The code works perfectly. The failure is that these massive corporations are prioritizing short-term product goals over long-term liability management because their decision-making architecture is broken.
So the disease is broken decision-making. And the treatment is adopting frameworks like JDM.
Yes.
But how do we enforce the treatment? The analysis suggests a dream solution for accountability, implementing fines against these companies.
Right, but not just arbitrary fines.
No, fines that are exactly equal to the expected costs forced onto all affected people.
Mm-hmm.
PLUS, direct financial remuneration for the actual time users spent dealing with the fallout.
It's an elegant concept of economic justice. If a company wastes $3 billion of the public's time through a reckless default setting, they pay a $3 billion fine directly back to the public.
That would be amazing.
It forces the corporation to internalize the costs that they are currently externalizing onto you and me.
I have to challenge the realism of that, though. And honestly, the author of the report challenges it too. He admits he has no actual influence over regulatory bodies, and that these highly specific, massive accountability fines are likely a pipe dream.
Yeah, it's pretty unlikely in the short term.
Right. If the fines are a fantasy and the companies hold all the power, are we just hopelessly sitting around waiting for these monster data collection monopolies to magically grow a conscience?
We aren't waiting for a conscience. We are waiting for the market to punish bad governance.
Okay, how so?
The author's grounded hope lies in the mechanics of long-term business survival. His conclusion is that companies built on extracting value through user friction and liability shifting are ultimately fragile.
Because eventually people get fed up.
Exactly. Eventually, the most successful, truly long-term organizations will be forced to adopt better decision-making frameworks simply because the loss of trust, the legal settlements, and the brand damage will become too expensive to ignore.
They will have to become trustworthy just to survive the liabilities they've created. And he directs this hope very specifically at the reader, right?
He does, because the people who are going to implement these frameworks aren't faceless entities. They are individuals.
Right.
His hope is that you, the person listening to this, might be a manager, a developer, or a decision maker at one of these companies. By understanding the profound difference between just making a choice and designing a rigorous decision-making process, you can start to turn the ship around from the inside.
That is a powerful and highly practical takeaway. So let's pull these threads together. We started with a single Google Meet update, a simple toggle switch regarding who can download meeting recordings.
Yeah, just one switch.
But by unpacking that one change, we exposed a $3 billion waste of administrative time. We saw how this update completely ignored foundational security principles like default deny and failsafe in favor of maximum data availability.
And we expanded that view to recognize that this isn't an isolated incident. It is a symptom of a deliberate industry-wide strategy. Tech giants use attrition and friction to wear down users, securing their data by making the alternative simply too exhausting to pursue. And at the root of all this is a fundamentally broken corporate decision-making process that fails to value the user's time or security.
Which brings it all right back to you, the listener. As someone navigating this world of digital overload, you now have a sharper lens. You know to view every single default setting you encounter with deep suspicion.
Absolutely.
It is not there to make your life easier. It is there to serve their metrics. And if you are in a leadership role, you now have a blueprint for why establishing how your team makes decisions is infinitely more important than the individual decisions themselves.
This raises an important question, though, building on the idea of meta frameworks. We've talked about how JDM helps us decide how to make decisions.
Right.
But if we follow that logic, what decision-making process do we use to decide to adopt that framework in the first place?
Ooh, that's a bit of a mind bender.
It is. And more importantly, on a purely human level, if we, as users, are constantly subjected to corporate choices that actively fail to protect us, where is the breaking point? At what point does the sheer exhaustion of constantly managing our own digital locks force us to unplug from these specific ecosystems entirely?
That is an incredibly heavy, lingering thought. It brings us right back to that apartment door analogy from the beginning.
Yeah.
If your landlord keeps changing the locks and leaving the door wide open, eventually you don't just keep asking for a new key. Eventually you pack up and move out.
You leave, exactly.
You really have to wonder how close we are to a mass digital move-out, where users simply reject platforms that refuse to protect them.
It is the exact question every major tech company should be rigorously evaluating right now.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden architecture of our digital choices. We hope you walk away seeing your settings menus in a completely different light. Keep questioning the defaults in your own life, stay curious, and we will see you on the next deep dive.